That musical phrase is familiar to sports fans everywhere as a rally cry for the home team. But few people today know anything about the voice behind that strange chant, a chant that was actually derived from a West Indian folk song sung by workers on the docks and on the banana plantations. The Banana Boat song became a monster hit for its singer in 1956, 28-year-old Harry Belafonte, whose album of songs from the West Indies entitled Calypso revolutionized the American musical landscape. But this was not the kind of revolution Belafonte had envisioned when he began his career in the late 1940s. Far from it. For Harry Belafonte's primary dream was not to be a singer, but to be an actor. Although his films have been well received, it is as a recording artist that he will be best remembered. During the 1950s and early 60s, Belafonte was one of the primary reasons that folk music began to be accepted by mass audiences. His records sold in the millions. He took folk music out of small nightclubs and into large concert halls and arenas, and performed as wide a variety of world music styles as any artist in the past 50 years. But when the so-called folk music revival is brought up, Belafonte's name is rarely mentioned. He has been accused by self-proclaimed folk purists of selling out and ransacking folk tradition for profit. But if not for Harry Belafonte, there are many, including myself, who might never have gotten interested in folk music in the first place. More than anyone else, Harry Belafonte brought folk music into the mainstream. Born to West Indian parents in New York City on March 1, 1927, Harold George Belafonte spent much of his boyhood in Kingston on the island of Jamaica. He served in the Navy during World War II and was working as a maintenance man's helper when he was given two tickets to a play put on by the American Negro Theater in Harlem. This sparked a burning desire by Belafonte to become an actor. Through the GI Bill, he was able to study acting at a New York dramatic workshop, along with fellow students that included Tony Curtis, Marlon Brando, and his longtime friend Sidney Poitier. He even participated in a few musical productions in which he sang for the first time. But after a while, Belafonte discovered that acting roles for African Americans in the late 1940s were few and far between. Discouraged, he haunted the jazz joints in Midtown Manhattan.
A friend of mine who owned a jazz nightclub that I used to frequent because I was and am a great jazz devotee, suggested that while I continue my study and while I was pursuing my interest in the theater, that I shouldn't abandon it altogether, put a couple of songs together, come on in and be an intermission singer. And the idea appealed to me because at least it kept me connected with the performing art. And I went into this nightclub called the Royal Roost and sang as an intermission singer, which only required three songs four times a night, while the audience is coming up for the next round of jazz musicians who are going to be playing. And there were jazz musicians like Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Max Roach, Billie Holiday as a singer, Dinah Washington, artists of that caliber.
Belafonte's intermission stint at the Royal Roost turned into a 20-week engagement and resulted in the recording of his first single for the club's Roost label in the spring of 1949. Backed by the Machito Orchestra, which was led by the Afro-Cuban jazz pioneer Mario Bauza, Belafonte recorded two songs, Lean On Me and Recognition, the latter a song he had written while he was in high school. The song represented his frustration and anger at being a black man in a white man's world and all the resentment that went along with it.
I want recognition as a man, that's all. I want recognition as a man. I want to put my shoulder to the wheel of freedom and to help it grow along.
The Roost record was a modest hit, selling an estimated 10,000 copies in the New York City area alone, thrusting Belafonte into a series of lucrative engagements in jazz nightclubs, including the newly opened Birdland and Cafe Society downtown. He expanded his repertoire to include popular ballads of the day and adopted the style of jazz vocalist Billy Eckstein. That summer, he was signed to Capitol Records, and with Pete Rugolo, an arranger for Stan Kenton, cut the first of eight sides for the label.
Close your eyes. When you open them, dear, I'll be near by your side. So won't you close your eyes?
The Capitol sides failed to draw any attention, and Belafonte made one more session as a pop singer late in 1950 for the Jubilee label. But by that time, he had become disillusioned by the songs he was singing, whose lyrics he termed insipid and insincere. During an engagement at Martha Raye's 5 o'clock club in Miami, he walked off the job.
And the more I became recognized in the nightclub circuit and in the pop semi-jazz field, the more I found myself being isolated from the theater. So I abandoned that whole life. Opened up a restaurant down in Greenwich Village, and tried to still pursue my interest in the theater, and found that that was not still unavailable to me. But then I discovered folk music, and I watched Leadbelly, and I watched Josh White, and I watched Burl Ives, and I watched Pete Seeger, and I watched Big Bill Brunsey, and Sonny Terry, and Brownie McGee, and I hung out down in Greenwich Village, and night after night I saw these artists at work, and a whole new side of America became, you know, was exposed to me. I began to see the great poetic richness that this country had in its regional art. And then I found out that there was a great source of this music at the Library of Congress, and I went down there and spent hours and hours and hours.
To call the Greenwich Village eatery a restaurant was being optimistic. In the parlance of the day, it was a greasy spoon, short-order hamburger joint in which Belafonte shared ownership with two friends, novelist Bill Attaway and another aspiring actor named Furman Phillips. The cafe attracted a select group of village indigents, jazz musicians, dope addicts, theater people, alcoholics, folk singers, and hoods. During this time, Belafonte developed a new act based on his studies of American folk music.
I originally set out to work with a young man by the name of Craig Work. Craig was a young guitarist, a wonderful classical guitarist as well as folk guitarist, and it was just he and I. And I put the songs together with Craig, we worked out the arrangements together. I sang because I didn't want to play the instrument, I wanted my hands free to be able to dramatize, to move about, to set moods, to act. Because a lot of what I do with the songs were to act out the material. I felt that if I were to play an instrument, I'd be restricted. I'd constantly be standing there tuning and doing all the things that marvelous guitar players who play for themselves do. And it becomes very limiting for where I wanted to go. And right in the middle of everything, just as I was about to step out, Craig Work was drafted for the Army. And we were just into the Korean War. And and then luckily, Miller Thomas, who was a friend of Craig, took on only to fill in because he wasn't particularly interested in doing anything, and none of us had any idea they would go to where it went. And when I opened at the Village Vanguard with Miller, it was instantly successful with the people. Miller stayed on and we worked together for a number of years.
Belafonte's engagement at the Village Vanguard began in November 1951. And lasted for 14 weeks. Even then, his hold over an audience was described by critics as spellbinding. Village Vanguard owner Max Gordon called it an unexpected and instantaneous explosion. After the Village Vanguard, Belafonte went uptown to the Blue Angel and then the Rendezvous Room in Philadelphia. In 1952, he was signed to RCA Victor and made his first recordings as a folk singer. RCA staff producer-arranger Hugo Winterhalter produced the session and surrounded Belafonte with an 18-piece orchestra to record a centuries-old sea shanty called A Roving, which Alan Lomax had researched for the Library of Congress. Here's the original 1939 field recording, followed by Belafonte's premier effort for RCA Victor.
In Amsterdam, there lived a maid, and she was a mistress of her trade. I'll go no more alone.
since roving's been my ruin. I'll go no more a roving from you, fair maid.
As his relationship with RCA Victor developed, Belafonte soon acquired greater control over his recordings, thanks in part to A&R director Dave Capp, and especially label president George Merrick. Aside from scant sessions featuring Woody Guthrie, Lead Belly, and Susan Reed in the 1940s, RCA Victor had not done much with folk music up to that point. And so Merrick was taking a chance with Belafonte, not only in allowing him to record folk music, but to give him creative control as well.
There was also the compromise on my part to be able to assist the company in being able to place folk music into the popular arena of American music taste, because up until that time, much of the music had been really considered quite esoteric. It had been considered an art form removed for only a specialization, only people who were interested in the small folk clubs of New York City. It wasn't until Pete Seeger and the Weavers and myself that we really broke through the sound barrier in the American field of folk music.
Belafonte began presenting traditional folk material in a way that would be both faithful to the original and commercially viable. At his next session, held 4 months later, Belafonte recorded his first calypso, Man Smart, Woman Smarter, which was written and first recorded in 1936 by the Trinidad calypsonian Norman Spann, who recorded under the name King Radio.
Ah, casco pata de mujer. Hasta mi mujer, sí. La un grande mujer. I say, let those good man and a woman together to find out which one is smarter. Some say men, but I say no. The women got the men beat, they should know, and not me. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray. But I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's right.
In 1952 and 1953, RCA issued 5 singles by Belafonte, with only one, a cover of a Japanese pop song called Gomen Nasai, drawing any notice. By this time, Belafonte had appeared in his first motion picture, portraying a school principal in MGM's Bright Road, featuring an all-black cast. Late in 1953, he made his first appearance on Broadway, singing 3 songs in a production of Almanac, produced by John Murray Anderson. The following year, he won the Tony Award for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical Show. The song that was the biggest hit of the 3 was one that Belafonte had written about America's folk novelist, Mark Twain. The song would eventually become the title track for Belafonte's first LP, issued in 1954.
Mark Twain! Skipper, pull it to the side. You gon' bust your bow and split your hide. Ooh, great God, we done run aground. Skipper gon' chase me with a big bloodhound. Mark Twain.
The album, Mark Twain and Other Folk Favorites, featured a variety of American folk songs. And although it wasn't a big seller at the time, it did get Belafonte noticed for his performance in Almanac. Director Otto Preminger saw the show and cast Belafonte in his film version of Carmen Jones, an all-black musical adaptation by Oscar Hammerstein of Georges Bizet's opera Carmen. In the film, Belafonte played opposite Dorothy Dandridge, who had also co-starred in Bright Road. But Belafonte's voice was not suited for opera, and so baritone Laverne Hutcherson dubbed his songs. A 20-year-old Marilyn Horne provided the voice for Dandridge's numbers. Despite this, the film was a hit, and Belafonte had a new role as a matinee idol. Belafonte's next Broadway show was a musical called Three for Tonight, and co-starred Broadway's Marge and Gower Champion. They played 94 performances on the road and then hit Broadway in April 1955. Three for Tonight featured Belafonte singing 14 songs from his repertoire, and his performance received universal raves from New York theater critics. As with Almanac, RCA Victor capitalized on the success of Three for Tonight with Belafonte's second album, this time entitled simply Belafonte, that focused on work songs associated with Lead Belly and Negro spirituals, including a riveting adaptation of the Golden Gate Jubilee Quartet's Noah, in which Belafonte acted out the role of a backwoods Baptist preacher.
And when God saw them sinning, it hurt him to his heart. It hurt him so bad it made him mad. It made him so mad he was angry. And when God got angry, the sky turned dark. And it was then that he told Noah to build the ark. Who built the ark?
Noah.
Who built the ark?
Noah.
Who built the ark?
Noah. Noah.
Noah built that ark.
After his second album showed increased sales, and with the success of the Three for Tonight tour, Harry Belafonte began planning his third album, which would be devoted to West Indian folk songs and calypso.
As a matter of fact, the Calypso album was to have been the start of a whole anthology of music that represented folk music from all around the world. And I started off with the Calypso CDs because it was the most identifiable and the easiest for me because I grew up in the West Indies. And I did it, and it went out as an album to be followed by songs from Latin America, and then songs from Africa, and then songs from France, and then Irish folk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when the first Calypso album came out, its success was caught me totally unawares, off guard. It became so massive that it frightened me. RCA began to put great pressure on me to turn out more of the same. If it had not been for George Merrick, I don't think I could have survived the company. Because it wasn't until many years later that I even put out the second one. And I made sure that most of my performances reflected very little of it. I sang some of the songs, but I really made sure, because everybody was in a big hurry to put me into a big blousy flowered shirt, put me into a bandana, and to make me a caricature of something, and to exploit all of that. Companies came after me to endorse back to school wear in the fall of Calypso pants, Calypso shirts. One major cosmetic company came wanting me to do Calypso shades and women's lipsticks and eyeshadows. It became a nightmare.
Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountaintop, I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica, I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around, I had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. When Dolly hear them soundy drum, up she jump and she holler, here I come. When Dolly hear them soundy drum, up she jump and she holler, here I come. Cause she gonna dance, she gonna sing, she gonna cause the rafters to ring. She gonna dance, she gonna sing, she gonna cause the rafters to ring. She gonna dance, she's a day.
Come back, Liza, come back, girl, wipe the tear from me eye. Come back, Liza, come back, girl, wipe the tear from me eye.
LPM 1248 was the surprise hit of 1956. A year in which another breakout artist named Elvis Presley dominated the charts. It was also the first album by a popular vocalist to sell 1 million copies and was the number one selling record on Billboard's top LP charts for a staggering 31 weeks. And it sparked a resurgence in sales of Belafonte's two previous albums. Because of Calypso's success, all of the songs on the record became associated with the Calypso tag, even though Deo, the most famous song on the album, was not a Calypso, but a West Indian work song, and another hit, Jamaica Farewell, was adapted from a traditional Jamaican folk song. Calypso triggered a veritable tidal wave of imitators, parodists, and artists wishing to capitalize on its success. Years later, it remains a record of inestimable influence, inspiring many folk singers and groups to perform, most notably the Kingston Trio, named for the Jamaican capital city. For a decade, just about every folk singer and folk group featured in their repertoire at least one song that was of West Indian origin.
All day, all night, Mary Ann, down by the seaside, sifting sand. Even little children love Mary Ann, down by the seaside, sifting sand.
I reveal how I do adore her, hang my heart on my sleeve just for her. All my love throughout life, I'll show her if this moment I could amour her.
Well, I carry me aki goodle instead market, not a quatty would sell. I carry me aki goodle instead market, not a quatty would sell. Oh, what a night, what a night, what a Saturday night. Oh, what a night, what a night, what a Saturday night.
Zombie Jamboree took place in the New York Cemetery.
Where?
Zombie Jamboree took place in Long Island Cemetery. Zombies from all parts of the island.
Where?
Some of them are great Calypsonians.
Zombie.
Hey, since the season was carnival, they got together in Bacchanal. What you doing?
I'm my Zelda. My Zelda. My Zelda. She took the money and ran with the tailor. Once again.
Day-o, day-o, daylight come and me won't go home. Day.
Wow, man, is I'll have to ask you not to shout like that.
Well,
it's like right in my ear, man.
Well, it goes with the song.
Yeah, but don't holler in my ear,
well,
man.
Well, it's authentic calypso.
Yeah, but like I stand next to me, man.
Well, the shout go with the bongo drums.
Well, not my bongo drums, man. I mean, move away.
Well, now. I don't see why.
No. Stand over next to the guitar, man.
He sent me over here.
Yeah. Well, then sing soft, man. You know, I mean, like, wow.
Belafonte's musical director during this period was jazz clarinetist Tony Scott, who assembled some of the jazz world's top soloists and session men to back Belafonte in the studio. These included names like Jimmy Giuffre, Buddy Collette, Harry Klee, Bud Shank, Maynard Ferguson, Connie Condoli, and Eugene Wright. As a result, songs like the newly revamped Man Smart, Woman Smarter swung with an Afro-Cuban big band drive, much like the Machito Orchestra that Belafonte started out with during his days at the Royal Roost.
Going where those chilly winds don't blow. God knows it'll burn in a jamboree. It's sung its own story since all this began. For man is the blues man, the blues is man. That's why it don't need a flag or a race. Just a lonely heart and a haunted face. Hello everybody, everybody out here. I'm mighty glad to be living, mighty glad to be here too. Yeah!
The man behind many of the songs on the Calypso album was Irving Burgee, who went under the pseudonym Lord Burgess. Burgee grew up in a West Indian neighborhood in Brooklyn and was a graduate of Juilliard and a professional singer himself when he met Belafonte while performing his Calypso tunes at the Village Vanguard in 1954.
Bunny, won't you come with me? Let's go back to the West Indies. Oh, baby, can't you see? I like my pep and my energy. For what I need, man.
Rum and coconut water.
Rum and
coconut water.
What a feel that
rum and coconut
water I cannot get in America.
Lord Burgess I knew first of all as a Calypsonian singer himself. His real name is Irving Burgess. He comes from Barbados. And when he and I met, I discovered in him an incredible reservoir of knowledge of the folk music of the West Indies. He and a woman by the name of Louise Bennett. And when I set out to do the Calypso album, he was the one that I went into alliance with, along with another writer by the name of Bill Attaway. And the three of us sorted out the music, tried to find out how best to get it across.
And pull your weight.
What were the words you would have?
Forget your aching from the day before. Cause today we gonna do down and
fall.
Need man holler, go! All men follow.
Down and almost all the songs in the first two or three Calypso albums that I did.
Oh, island in the sun, ill to me by my father's hand. All my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand.
Angelico, Angelico, your mama got to take you back. Angelico, Angelico, teach you all the things you lack.
Now I tell you in a positive way, don't tie me donkey down there. Cause me donkey will romp and play, don't tie me donkey down there.
Hey! Jackass will jump and break, let him break, let him break.
Come we go down, come we go down, come we go down to Kingston Market. Come we go down, come we go down, down to Kingston Market.
Haiti Sherry says Haiti is my beloved land. Oh, I never knew that I'd have to leave you to understand.
Go down, Emmanuel, good man and boy. Got to break that stone, hide your daughter. Go down, Emmanuel, good man and boy. Got to break that stone, up the mountain.
Go down, Emmanuel, road, man and boy. Got to break that stone once again. Go down, Emmanuel, road, man and boy. Got to break that stone.
In early 1956, Belafonte and his manager at that time, J. Richard Kennedy, developed a musical production called Sing Man Sing. The show's threadbare plot concerned the plight of man as he tried to find happiness from the Garden of Eden to modern times. Songs from Belafonte's repertoire were shoehorned into the story, often with no apparent reason, such as Hosanna and Will His Love Be Like His Rum from the Calypso album, and Noah and Leadbelly's Jump Down Spin Around from his self-titled second LP. But even Belafonte's fame as the King of Calypso couldn't save Sing Man Sing. He pitched the idea of a soundtrack album to RCA Victor, who refused, calling it pretentious. The show turned out to be a flop, and although it did good box office in cities like Chicago, here in Cleveland, and Detroit, it never made it to Broadway, and Belafonte battled racial discrimination while on the tour. He would never appear in a Broadway show again. Fighting the tidal wave of demands for him to record a follow-up album of Calypso tunes, Belafonte stubbornly proceeded with plans to devote a series of LPs to folk music from around the world. In the ensuing decade, Belafonte enjoyed his most creative and prolific period with concept albums focusing on spirituals, blues, chain gang and prison songs, an album with a children's choir, and South African and Greek music, the latter co-starring singers Miriam Makeba and Nana Muscori. With no world music category yet in record stores, Belafonte LPs were grudgingly placed in the male vocalist section, where they still are today. In each instance, Belafonte used his innate talent for assimilating traditional tunes for popular consumption. In this medley, I've juxtaposed Belafonte's versions of a few of these with antecedents that he most likely drew this material from.
Like a
musty sirocco from here to Macon, all the way to the jailboat.
No, Edward is noble and great, but love caused him to abdicate.
It's love alone that caused him ever to leave the throne.
On the 10th of December we heard the talk. He gave his throne to the Duke of York. It was love, 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 love alone caused King Edward to leave his throne. King Edward,
it's a mighty hard row that my poor hand has hold. My poor feet has traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your mountains are hot, your deserts are cold.
Green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground, from the Grand Coulee Dam where the waters run down. Every state of this union, us migrants have been. We come with the dust and we're gone with the wind.
Just as Belafonte used his acting technique to enhance his vocal performances, he was often given a musical selection to perform in his motion pictures. In 1957, he starred in Island in the Sun, in which he portrayed a labor leader on a fictional Caribbean island. In the film, he performed the title song and also Lead Man Holler, a work song of Sugarcane Cutters.
You hear me calling, men, and heed your fate. Jump up, brother, come and pull your weight. Forget your aching from the day before, 'cause today we gonna do doubt and more. Lead man holler, go! All men follow.
Down the road for work, you know.
Down you go for a working dollar. Working man, I am tried and true. I won't ask you nothing that I wouldn't do. Pay today is the same as last. He works the same, just a little fast. A lead man holler, go!
All men holler. Down you go for a working dollar.
Left and you bring her wide, lean a bit to your starboard side, pull her right in a little more to port. Slack up, men, while you hold her short. A lead man holler, yo! All men follow. Down you go for a working dollar. Yes, you holler, yo! All men follow. Down you go for a working dollar. Like to tell you about yesterday. Work right well, I am proud to say. I want every man to try his will and make yesterday look like you were standing still. A lead man holler, yo! All men follow. Down you go for a working dollar. Yes, he holler, yo! All men follow. Down you go for a working dollar.
In the 1959 film noir bank heist picture, Odds Against Tomorrow, Belafonte played Johnny Ingram, a down-on-his-luck gambler looking for a quick score. In this next scene, Belafonte sings the blues in a nightclub while the loan shark he owes money to and his hoods look on. The score was composed by the Modern Jazz Quartet's John Lewis, and Belafonte's vibraphone playing was dubbed by the MJQ's Milt Jackson. That look he gives the guy. In 1959, Harry Belafonte was asked by Eleanor Roosevelt to do a benefit. Let's see. Oh, that's Island of the Sun. Okay, so we're past that. Odds Against Tomorrow. There we go. To do a benefit for the Wiltwyck School for Boys. The concerts were staged at New York's venerable Carnegie Hall, which was at that time in danger of being torn down. RCA Victor recorded the concert at Belafonte's insistence, even though most of the songs had been already out on previously released LPs. George Merrick believed in Belafonte's instincts and spent the $14,000 to record the shows. The concerts helped save Carnegie Hall from destruction, and the resulting two-record set ended up selling 24 million copies and is still in print on compact disc today.
The first Carnegie Hall album was a happening. As a matter of fact, I think it became a very, very important forerunner to live performances being recorded by pop artists. Now, that technique existed very successfully for Norman Granz, who at that time was doing jazz at the Philharmonic and was recording a lot of live performances among jazz musicians, which in fact was what gave me the idea to go ahead and do it. But pop performers had never done that. And when we did this album, it then became quite the vogue, and a lot of artists after that began recording live performances.
Now the glee club, ma, did us sing out the chorus. a little louder. Big, more magnificent. All the big spenders, Matilda, a little louder, Ma. Sing out the chorus, Matilda. Take me money and run Venice with the whole ground floor, Matilda.
Belafonte at Carnegie Hall captured Harry Belafonte's unique relationship he had with his audiences. He not only captivated them with his riveting performances, he engaged them, knocking down the glass wall between performer and spectator. A follow-up album was recorded at Carnegie Hall in 1960, and in 1963, Belafonte shattered attendance records by selling out Los Angeles's Greek Theater for a solid month. More groundbreaking work was to come for Belafonte. In 1960, while the pop world was doing the twist with Chubby Checker, Belafonte was recording a stark album of chain gang songs called Swing Dat Hammer. Accompanied only by an occasional guitar, bass, and the male chorus known as the Belafonte Folk Singers, Belafonte brought to life the hypnotic, rhythmic chants of Negro prisoners as no one had before, revealing riveting, passionate songs of unrelenting loneliness and shame, torturous days laboring in the hot sun, and bald-faced hatred for prison guards and even their guard dogs. The album earned Belafonte his first Grammy for Best Folk Performance.
I got a hammer, 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 here and a hill, yes, gon' carry it on that mountain top. Here and a hill, yes, gon' hammer on that mountain. Here and a hill, until that mountain is a molehill. Here and a hill, yes, been served. Last night I heard the bloodhounds, two of them end an escape. One was framed for murder, and the other one framed for rape. Diamond Joe, will they catch him? Diamond Joe, will they catch him? Diamond Joe, will they catch him? Diamond Joe.
Hey, Billy Blue. You know how to cook a possum?
Don't everybody?
Not like my old lady. Man, we had my old lady cook a possum. The first day, she's digging in a bottle of corn squeezings and juice it up there a little while. Mm-hmm. And the next day, she put it in a bottle of bourbon and juice that one up a little while. Then she put it in a bottle of dandelion wine and juice that up a little bit.
Yeah, man. You gonna ruin the possum.
Damn the possum. That shows some good gravy.
Sing it. Hi, boys, swing it low, boys, swing that hammer till you dead.
In 1961, Belafonte recorded an album that best exemplified his uniqueness as a recording artist. His main strength as a performer had been his ability to effect unique interpretations of traditional material. Combining blues, big band, and gospel, Belafonte created one of his best programmed albums of the 60s. The LP also saw the recording debut of one of the decade's most influential icons, Bob Dylan.
I did an album called Midnight Special. And I needed a harmonica player. And I loved the way Dylan played harmonica. And I went to him and I asked him, would he play on the session? And he said yes, and this was a little before he'd arrived. And I got Bob Dylan to come and sit in on the session, and he played a hot harmonica.
At the Midnight Special, shine its ever-loving light on me.
The end of the session, he had to rush off because we were still doing other things. He finished his end of it. I watched him throw the harmonica into the garbage can, and he left. And that always bothered me. I didn't know whether Bob Dylan was making a comment on what he had played or a comment on the music or whatever, because he's kind of...
No one knows.
Yes. No, I caught on to him some years later. We ran into one another under fairly easy circumstances, and I asked him. I said, I never forgot when you played the session and how well it all went. I mean, when you left, just before you walked out the door, I saw you throw the harmonic into the garbage. What did that all mean? And he pointed out that the instruments were very cheap. He bought them in Woolworths, and it gave a certain sound, and that once you blew them, they were not of a caliber that they could be played again, so there was just no use for it. The reeds went on you, and it was just a tinny thing, but that tinny little harmonica gave him a kind of a sound that he liked that you didn't get in the more classic instruments like a Horner and a marine band, which are made to play forever. So that was the reason he threw in. I was very relieved to hear that.
Well, this story may or may not be an example of Dylan putting Belafonte on. Since he only appeared on the title track of the album, there have been suspicions that the iconoclastic Dylan just couldn't deal with Belafonte's obsessive perfectionism in the studio. And after the first song was cut, he chucked his harmonica in the trash and walked out. We may never know the truth. In the 60s and 70s, Harry Belafonte championed other folk artists from around the world and shared the stage with the likes of singers Miriam Makeba, Leda Mbulu, the Brazilian accordionist Savuka, and others. But the success of rock groups like the Jefferson Airplane was making Belafonte old news at RCA Victor. In 1973, after 2 decades with the label, he left. He released one more album of West Indian songs in 1977 for CBS called Turn the World Around, but it was only issued in Holland. In 1988, at the age of 61, Belafonte recorded Paradise in Gazankulu, a collection of vital, exciting music with a point of view. The cause that triggered this creative explosion was South Africa's apartheid system. Long an advocate of black sovereignty in the country, Belafonte combined anger, defiance, and pride in this invigorating selection of songs recorded in Johannesburg. In 1999, a treasure trove of tapes was discovered in the vaults of BMG Records, which owns all material recorded by RCA Victor. The tapes were for a project to be called New World A-Comin', the Anthology of Black Music, proposed by former RCA Victor president George Merrick, choral arranger Leonard Depore, and produced by Harry Belafonte. The anthology was a musical history of African Americans in the United States, from the earliest known chants, hymns, and work songs at the dawn of our nation's history, through the songs of black soldiers in the Civil War, to minstrelsy, spirituals, chain gang songs, early blues, and the chants and folklore of street vendors, gamblers, and working men and women. 10 years in the making, the project began in 1961 and featured performances by Belafonte, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, Bessie Jones and the Georgia Sea Island Singers, Joe Williams, and Gloria Lynn, plus a choir handpicked by Depore. Initially set to be a 5-LP anthology, the project was shelved and was literally kept underground for nearly 3 decades. Resurrected by Buddha Records and engineer David Belafonte, Harry's son, the collection was renamed Long Road to Freedom and was issued on a 5-compact disc box set in 2001. The anthology was the culmination of a lifelong dream of Harry Belafonte to document, demonstrate, and instruct Americans on the musical and folkloric history of black America. It was his crowning achievement. I have a snippet from a DVD interview with Belafonte. I know we're running over time, but I just got like to get a poll and see if anyone wants to see that. Would that be all right, Suzanne? Is that all right? No? Then we'll just go on. Although this presentation focused on the first decade of Harry Belafonte's recording career with RCA Victor, he had many more important albums recorded in the 60s and 70s. But it was his initial recordings in the 1950s and early 60s that helped usher in the folk music revival. Today, Belafonte is still performing, appearing in motion pictures, and working as a civil rights activist. On March 1st, he celebrated his 77th birthday. Thank you for your attention, and I hope you have a pleasant remainder of the conference.
Just a quick announcement for everyone. I hope you'll go out to University Circle this afternoon. If you want to go to the Cleveland Orchestra session, that goes on in Harkness Chapel around 2 o'clock. So be sure you're on the first two buses. Buses will be available on the lower lobby level, the Superior Avenue exit of the hotel, beginning at 1:15. They leave at 1:30. So first two buses for the Cleveland Orchestra session. The third bus will take people to the museums. If you want to go to the Cleveland Museum of Art, get on the third bus. But the first two buses will absolutely leave at 1:30. And then after Harkness Chapel, we'll go to Severance Hall. There'll be a reception in Guilford House. All of those are very close together, only about a block apart. And buses will take people back between 4 and 6 p.m. this afternoon. So buses on the lower lobby level, 1:15 to 1:30. Thanks.